Hi there, I'm Malak Fouad, and you're listening to the final episode of this season of What I Did Next from A&T Media. My guests on the show are leaders in their fields from across the Middle East, and our conversations revolve around their life's pivot points. We all have those pivots in life. Some are hard, some happen without you knowing, and some are magical, taking you into a whole new direction. I'm joined on the show today by a powerhouse businesswoman and a phenomenal role model, Naveen Al-Tahri. Naveen is a towering figure in the banking and business community in Egypt. She's the first woman to sit on the board of both the Egyptian Stock Exchange and the Egyptian Financial Supervisory Authority. More recently, she's been associated with the world of entrepreneurship. As chairperson of Delta Shield, Naveen is enhancing growth and employment with a focus on youth, entrepreneurship, and SME activities. Our conversation, though, did not just focus on her career. We chatted about marriage, religion, and health. We're both cancer survivors, and there is a comfort in sharing stories from different times in our lives. We started out with a question I've enjoyed asking my guests this season. When was the last time Naveen did something for the first time?
At first, I thought I couldn't answer them. But then I remembered a situation where my daughter was, she lives in Paris, and she's been living there for almost 13 or 14 years now. And it was Easter, and she wanted to eat smoked herring, ringa. And I thought, oh my God, how will I ever do that? And I found myself taking ringa.
Making it from scratch.
And taking it with me in my luggage and kept thinking, oh my God, if there are dogs that are going to be there or whatever. So this is the first time I ever endeavored into doing something, but I was extremely uncomfortable. But she did eat ringa in Eastern, and nobody actually told me anything.
And there were no dogs at the airport.
And there was nothing, but I got it inside. So it was really interesting.
I know a lot more about your adulthood, your career, your public persona. But tell me a little bit about your childhood.
I had a very interesting childhood. My father was a diplomat. So basically, I spent most of my young life as diplomats. Usually, you stay 4 years and then move, 4 years and then move. It was not the case in our case. In our case, of my 17 years before coming here, or 16 years, I think I only came 1 year to Egypt. So basically, I spent all my childhood moving from one country to the other.
Wow, I didn't realize. Where were you?
Our first post where I was a baby was in Panama. And then from Panama to Lebanon, from Lebanon to Finland, from Finland to England.
Wow.
And so it's so interesting because everybody who asks me, how do you get your entrepreneurial, it's my character. And I always say, although my father was a typical muwazzaf,
he was a diplomat.
And yet they usually sent him to every place that was new to open. And so, to a great extent, I always think of him as an entrepreneur, but on the diplomatic side and on the political side,
a pioneer as well,
As opposed to being from the business side. So
But again, it could have also been because at that time in Egypt, the business life was a very different situation.
Very, very.
If he wanted to channel any of his ambitions, that was a very natural way, was a diplomacy way.
No, I don't think he would have ever been a good businessman. Yeah.
It wouldn't exist at the time.
So
you came to Egypt, as you said, 17?
As a youngster, one of the things that I always say built a lot of my character and my sisters, I'm one of three girls and I'm the eldest. And it's every summer, my dad, we only had 6 weeks of holidays, and he would insist that we work. And I could never, as a youngster, understand why you would work. So at one time, I was an assistant librarian. At another time, I would be distributing the newspapers.
And is this in Egypt?
No.
When you were away?
I was always away. Yeah. And then we would come for 2 weeks to Egypt. And it's very interesting because he would take us, so we come from the countryside, my father, and his family is there. So I would go to two places. I would go to Munteza and to the countryside. The one thing I really learned very much from this up and down, I went to 8 schools in my life.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of school. Is I can just, I feel comfortable sitting with anyone. Yeah, and if I'm, I don't have this.
You're adaptable.
But it's not necessarily because of the fact that you traveled everywhere, although this has a lot to do with it. It's also your character. Because I know children of diplomats who are shy and reserved and maybe didn't feel as comfortable in that, but it's clearly also your character.
Well, one thing, I say that, but being honest with you, I always feel out of place.
Oh.
Yani, unlike what I am.
You don't seem to feel like that.
Exactly. Yani, and it's a very strange thing.
In what sense?
Example, when I'm invited anywhere. You know that we are typically the women sit together and the men sit together. And I've always been in a man's world. I've never been in a woman's world. And yet I'm so uncomfortable and then I sit with the men. I mean, why? Because I don't want to be seen that I am not part of the women. And so...
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation.
Not that I'm uncomfortable, yani, but it's just that I'm never in a place where I'm 100%, except with my family. Yani, I think that's the only happy, comfortable place, which...
I think this is also a generational thing, Naveen, because I think women who are younger, I'm a bit younger than you, women who are younger than me, I don't think there are these barriers so much anymore in terms of women in the workplace, especially.
Yeah.
There isn't the sense of the only woman in the room.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's these things are changing.
Yes.
And in the Middle East very much and very
rapidly. I mean, I know I for myself, yes. Yani, when I started hiring people, I was hiring women. Yeah. Why? Because the industry does not hire them and I know what women are capable of. I know they're multitaskers, dedicated. Yeah. It's not about the
time
salary
management
as much as the, absolutely.
Time management, mahasalsh.
Unbelievable. If you are not one
and
understand, yani I have been lucky because I brought women into the workforce on the stock exchange, and And wherever I am on a board, I make sure that I have more women that come in and to replace me when I'm undone. Why? Because. We have to. Otherwise, we're not going to be given that chance. And I find myself being asked to go to so many. I say, can I recommend someone? Because I know a lot of women who are so clever. They don't have the chance.
They,
I mean, they're not there being told, come and sit. So this is whereby I can play a role.
Absolutely. So you graduated from University of Cairo, and then you went into finance right away. You went into banking.
In 1981.
Ah, okay.
And the first bank that had opened was Chase National Bank, which is Chase Manhattan with NBE. And when I went in, I wanted to be in the credit department because that's what I know.
Yeah.
And I was offered a teller's job.
Wow,
so
really?
I started off as a teller.
So you've done everything in every bank,
Absolutely.
Then. You know the whole way.
So
that's wonderful, though.
It is unbelievable. Yeah. I think when you understand the bottom of it and you work your way up, the amount of knowledge you get is beyond.
You know, Naveen, I think if you're lucky, you start that way.
Yeah.
Because I was lucky enough also to do lots of menial work when I started out. And today's generation... Don't want to do this. They want to come in as managers, CEOs.
Exactly.
And I'm thinking how, you know, you have to understand the foundation.
And that foundation, it's throughout your career, you're going to link it back to something that you learned.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you are very superficial because you have taken the... And I very much respect family businesses when they do not put their businesses... their kids directly into the positions of board members or whatever, but having them work and then they work
Definitely.
Their way up, it makes such a
it
big
makes
difference.
A difference. Absolutely. So you knew from an early age that you wanted to be in the business and financial sector. Did you get married around the same time?
My husband was my boyfriend.
From college?
From college. And then I got engaged right after I finished. And then I was married. I mean, I was married immediately in 1981. Mm-hmm. And I started the job in 1980. So it was immediately after. And had my my daughter was 3 months when I started the credit course. And I remember it's a very tough credit course. We were 32 people who entered. Only 17 of us were...
How long was the course?
Almost 6 months.
Wow, very intense.
In every single time we had a test, you had to get 70%. And I remember it was the last credit course, CC5.
Remember, these are obviously formative.
Absolutely.
It was very formative for you. You remember the details.
He would say, if Naveen did the homework, then everybody should have done
That's
it.
That's true.
My daughter was three months old, so you can imagine. Yeah, and I never had a live-in maid, ever.
Wow, Naveen, that's
ever
very impressive. And what was your family's reaction to you juggling all this? Your mother, your mother-in-law, were they supportive? Did they understand it?
My mother-in-law was very instrumental, honestly. I think if it hadn't been for her, may she rest in peace, I don't think I would have probably been able to, because I would go in the morning with my daughter, in her basket. She would actually be downstairs, take the basket, but I had to be home at 4. And I think that's, and then we went to the kindergarten at the age of 2, and it was exactly the same. So but as you say, it's time management. It's all about time management.
Yeah. And you sacrifice certain things. You probably had no social life, but
absolutely.
You can't have everything. There are priorities and, that's what's important.
Yeah.
So what was next for you after that? So you carried on working at the bank for a while.
After the credit course?
You stayed on.
No, I actually resigned because I wanted a higher salary. And they would not give me the higher salary, which was the wrong thing to do.
So you ended up asking in the end.
I asked because all my colleagues were at a certain grade and with certain salary, but they had not started in the operations department.
There was always a reason why you shouldn't be getting it.
And so when I said no, I actually resigned, went to Bank of America's joint venture for a year. I was hired at 3 times my salary, promoted twice in a year, but then I wasn't learning. So when CIB then.
So you went back.
They offered me the same, like my colleagues and everything.
Yeah.
And I went back because a learning environment is a very important environment.
When we come back, we'll get into how Naveen pivoted towards entrepreneurship.
I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our bonus episodes, available exclusively for subscribers. On each bonus episode, I take a deeper dive into my guests' industries, and I share some extra parts from our conversation. For example, you can find out more about the screenwriting process with acclaimed filmmaker Mo Hevzi, or about the luxury design industry with Monez and Ayad Raouf, the sisters behind Ochtin. All of these great stories are only available on our bonus episodes, so subscribe now to unlock this amazing extra content. You can subscribe in Apple Podcasts by clicking the subscribe button or on our website and get instant access to all our bonus episodes with a 2-week free trial. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. I'm Malak Fouad, and you're listening to What I Did Next, and this is my conversation with Naveen Iltahri.
I think you became more known to the wider society. So tell me a little bit about that. What was that shift like for you? This is clearly a big shift in your life. How did things change for you work-wise after this?
Well, it was very interesting. Yeah, you think that when you have your own company, you work less. It's absolutely the opposite. And all of a sudden, you're responsible for other people. And you realize that you are the bread maker of those people, so you have much more commitment.
There's a lot of pressure on you.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable. And so when I started because I come from a financial background, the capital requirement of these companies did not match what I would call the right thing. So I decided I wanted to partner with an institution that would give me the backing that I think is needed. So I actually went to my bank, CIB, Adel Laben, and I said, I want a partner. And at the time, Adel said, here's the check. Just tell me how much you want and we'll buy you out. I said, well, I don't want that. So he said, you wanted to work together. Yeah.
Yeah.
A partnership.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but he wanted, I mean, what he offered was a buyout and you have to, until tomorrow to decide. So I go down, I call a friend of mine at Egyptian American Bank, which is today a different, a Crédit Agricole. And I call him and I say, this was Bank of America, a partner. I said, it was the second largest at the time. Can I have an appointment with your managing director? His name was Gary Jones, and I remember. And he said, come immediately. So I walk same day into Egyptian American Bank, offer him what I'm doing, what I want to do, and I become the partner. So having you hit what I, what made me strong is I hid behind the name of an institution.
Mm.
So Delta became Delta EAB. And this is the sequence I went through.
But it's not hiding. It's combining your know-how with maybe just access to more resources.
Actually, I did not have much access. That very first partnership did not have much access, but I thought I had. I mean, I think they had 21 branches, which was the most number anybody had. Not one single transaction went through these branches, but I actually was the first to create the infrastructure of the one-stop shop, more or less, because they had I had all these branches. So the FRA, the Financial Regulatory Authority at the time, built their system based on what it is. I was always at a very early stage than the market, which building part of what the...
So they were catching up with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting because that's what the foreign partnership brought in.
You're clearly someone who has had a lot of firsts. So you were the first woman on the stock exchange. And now are you, you're also on the boards now of a lot of other companies that you're not directly running.
Yes.
What is most satisfying for you, the work you're doing in terms of the entrepreneurial that's under your name, or also being on boards where you can have an input in maybe an industry that you're not as involved in?
I mean, being on board started because I'm always seen as an I have investment know-how.
Yes.
So usually that I would be put on boards, and then came that you also are a woman, so it also gives the diversity within the board.
Sure.
But I think what I like most is anything to do with youth. Yani my heart and my on the personal side is helping young people create their own companies or build more or whatever. And the other thing that I really like is always the what I can do for the country. So even on the entrepreneurial side, it was after a revolution that I started to create. I didn't even know that's venture capital. Even the names,
the terminology
comes in after I start. So I was working with small and medium enterprises before I got to know what SMEs are. Entrepreneurship, before I know what entrepreneurship means. So it's always out of passion to work with young people and young companies.
Is it always Egypt-based?
It's always been Egypt-based.
Always been Egypt-based.
I've been on the jury of Cartier Women Initiative, on MIT, Arab. I've been exposed as somebody who judges, but my own investments
And your expertise is homegrown.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yani, taban, I have a lot of foreign exposure because I was partner of ABN AMRO. So I was sitting as the country representative of ABN AMRO and then a Royal Bank of Scotland. So I always, I also have this international exposure.
I wanted to turn to a couple of personal things. And we can talk about it in whatever order you prefer. I wanted to talk about your recent divorce, if you're happy to do that. And then I'd like to talk about a little bit about religion, because when I met you, you were veiled.
Yes.
And then I saw you a year ago, and I didn't recognize you at first. I'm curious to know, Bardu, what happened there. And finally, something you and I both share is cancer.
Yes.
So I wanted also to talk about that. I'll let you decide the order that you would like to talk about it and how much you want to talk about it.
Yeah, I'll talk about religion.
Okay.
Okay. As I told you earlier, when I came back from abroad, I come from a diplomatic family. So we had wine on the table and everything. And then to learn Arabic, I'm the eldest, so I was given the sheikh. My two other sisters were given just a teacher. And so I learned Arabic through the Quran. And I'm damn sure that there must have been a lot of things that was given to me from the sheikh in my mind. So at a very young age, when I was that young, I was 17 or 18, I wanted to be veiled. And my father said, "No, darling, not in my home." Mm-mm-mm. Nobody had ever been veiled. I mean, you're talking about the early
70s. Yeah.
And he said, no. And I said, "But what do you want?" I said, "Okay, I'll go and to pilgrimage." He said, "Fine, that we can do."
Yeah.
And it was very interesting because he sent me, my mother, and all my four grandparents because of that. And I think I still remembered it till the day, because he had a privileged job at the time, working with Saudi, handling something that's part of politics. And so we were given
the VIP treatment.
Oh my God.
In Mecca.
Yeah, anyway, I went inside the Haram al-Nabawi at Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam's grave, went inside the Kaaba. I mean, we were given something that nobody
no could one have. Gets access to.
And so after that, it was very clear that no.
He was anti.
Absolutely.
But you were more convinced.
I mean, I probably was very convinced because growing up from there, I always brought scarves. I was damn sure I brought scarves. Until when was it when Khaled, they started talking a lot about the hijab and the... And then I started thinking, you know what, I'm not convinced. And I never was convinced, which is very interesting because I do tell everybody, even when I started, and I'm not convinced. And yet, just in case it's the right thing to do, I will do.
So it was like an insurance policy.
And if you see me, I am very open. Yeah. And they all, my sisters, nobody else. And I remember when I talked to my sister, she said on the phone, she said, "Is this peer pressure?" I said, "No." She said, "You're actually going to put a veil on?" I said, "Yes." "Why?" "I'm not sure, but I'm going to put the veil on." And so it was a very tough decision. It took me many years, by the way, to decide.
To make the decision.
Absolutely. Why? Because I know that had it been a must, it would have been much more evident in a lot of our readings. But it isn't. Mm. And yet the whole talk was, and it's... It has to be. So just in case you are in the wrong, I did put the veil on. And at the time I asked my husband, "Do you mind?" He said, "It's something that you decide, not I decide." And Dina, my daughter, "Will I have to do that?" "No, you don't have
How
to."
How old was she then when you
I
decided?
I think she was probably 12.
Oh, she was quite very aware of what you
And did. I had just partnered with a new Dutch bank, and I was so worried that they would ask me. Mm. But they never did. I mean, this is what I love about foreigners. Mm. Is they take you as you are.
Yeah, they do.
They don't actually question you.
And they don't understand the society anyway. So for them... they take you as you are, as you said.
But then they would ask me after they get to know me a little, Naveen, what is the veil? And I say, it's just, our religion says so and so, and I'm not sure if it's right or if it's wrong, but I'm happy doing it.
But it's interesting that you were always questioning it. You were never sure.
No, I'm sure it's not.
Yeah.
But yet, we have a saying, istafti qalbak. And so why did I take it off? I think there was a time when the Ikhwan came into office,
yeah,
where I was definitely going to take it off because they were enforcing it. And the way that they treated women, I was definitely going to take it off. And then they left.
They left quickly, yeah.
And when they left, I continued in having it. And when I turned 60, before that, I remember I was in Paris when the Bataclan happened. And I live in the Sixième, which is very old, upper class.
Yeah.
And it was my daughter's birthday. This was the 13th of November, and her birthday is 15th of November. And everything closed down. And I remember going, the only shop that was open was the flower shop. And I go in, and then the lady tells me, c'est très difficile maintenant pour vous comme ça.
Wow.
Very difficult for you like that. And I said, oh my God. So I took it off. And
you took it off that day?
But I took it off there. And I said, you know what? I'm in their country. They should be comfortable. I'm here as a visitor. Mm. And so every time I went to Paris after that, I would not have my veil on. And every time my kids would say, take it off. And it was very difficult.
It's very difficult. It sounds to me like there was a lot of indecision. And you were doing it in phases almost.
It was. And probably one of the reasons when they asked me why, I kept saying consistency. I mean, I happen to be like a role model to a lot of the young people, especially women. And so I felt as though I'm letting them down.
But it's not like, do you still think that?
I actually don't think that for one reason. Is when I turn 60, I'll be 64 in a couple of days. And I remember al-qawa'id, and they kept telling me, you're mil-qawa'id, mil-qawa'id. And so whenever even I see them, I say I'm mil-qawa'id. So I'm giving myself a reason to tell those that would have looked up to you looking like that.
Yeah.
And especially that you look much nicer. Yani in Harda, I probably look much nicer than with the veil. Yani you're much more elegant. You look younger.
You look a lot younger, Naveen.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yani family.
But you know, it's such a personal choice.
Very.
And no one can comment on it except for you.
I remember my mom, she was never veiled.
Mm.
And I would be talking to her on the phone and say, Mommy, I have to leave because I'm going to a wedding. And she'd say, ومتلفعه بإيه النهاردة. And so this is how my family took it. They were never
in favor.
And yet I was.
And yet you did it.
Yeah.
For how many years?
More than 20.
The veil doesn't define you, doesn't define how you approach religion.
No.
It doesn't define your belief in God. It doesn't define connection to God.
No. And I'm very connected, alhamdulillah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very, and I'm very happy. Yani, I have this calmness, I think, coming from that religion. I truly believe in everything is His doing. And I do my best, and I will be a very good citizen and a very good everything, and which is what religion is.
Yeah.
For Anna, I'm very close in terms of being religious. Yeah. Yani, my prayers are exactly my everything is mine.
Yes.
And so it does not need you to cover
order
to. Plus, honestly, religion is between you and Him.
It really is.
It has nobody else to come
in. No intermediary is necessary.
When we return from the break, you'll find out why Naveen calls herself someone who is beyond words or explanation. That's coming up next. I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our bonus episodes, available exclusively for subscribers. On each bonus episode, I take a deeper dive into my guests' industries, and I share some extra parts from our conversation. For example, actor and comedian Rami Youssef told me about his thoughts on cancel culture, and ex-anchor and now author Hela Gorani told me her thoughts on the future of journalism. All of these great stories are only available on our bonus episodes, so subscribe now to unlock this amazing extra content. You can subscribe in Apple Podcasts by clicking the subscribe button or on our website and get instant access to all our bonus episodes with a 2-week free trial. And now, back to the show. Welcome again. I'm Malak Fouad, and you're listening to What I Did Next, and this is my conversation with Naveen Al-Tahri.
What was the feeling when you finally decided to not wear it at all, either in Paris or here? How did it make you feel?
We're very honest here, okay?
Yes.
I still feel I wear it because I wear a wig.
Okay.
But I actually feel as though I'm still hiding.
Yeah.
And why do I feel I'm still hiding? I probably don't have a minute to go to the hairdresser.
Are you wearing a wig because of chemotherapy?
No.
Okay.
I never lost my hair.
Alhamdulillah.
But I have very black hair.
Okay.
I don't have one single white hair.
You're very lucky. I have only white hair.
I know. And my hair is not that bad. And so my grandson last week was telling me, Naveen, why do you wear a wig? And I said, because I don't have time to go to the hairdresser. And I actually feel it's a...
It's a similar feeling in a way.
Absolutely.
Because you feel camouflaged.
Absolutely.
And is that... Are you going to continue doing that?
Yeah. I mean, I look much prettier than my hair.
But why? Why can't you just leave your hair?
Because I'm not going to go to the hairdresser. I know myself.
But why do you need to go to the hairdresser?
Like, my hair is not that nice.
But you can have a hairstyle that doesn't need a lot of hair.
You know,
I don't go to the hairdresser.
Labas, you have beautiful
but
hair.
But I do my hair myself.
Labas, Anna, you can't imagine. Anna, I'm somebody beyond words. Lala, beyond. Honestly and truly, Amalek, I work 24 hours. Even when I'm sleeping, I'm working.
You're thinking about it.
And I have a paper next to me to write what it is. So it's just...
It's consuming you.
It's consuming, and I'm happily consumed.
Yeah,
it's
not that I'm unhappy. Yeah.
Plus, I'll never have that thick a hair anyway. And if it looks nice and it's fashionable...
I would never have known. And I've worn wigs, by the way.
And I honestly enjoy...
Yeah.
Yani, if anybody sees it,
Well, I have two extras if you need. I have different styles.
And I want to tell you, every time I went and my kids would really, please, please. So I would go buy a wig.
Yeah.
And I come back and I don't take it off. Yanivin. And so the last time when I said, I will do it, which they did not believe, I bought 3 wigs exactly the same. So that I don't change
The look doesn't change.
And this was only a couple of months ago, by the way.
So you feel still that you have the protection of being covered.
Yes.
Do you think you'll ever not wear this?
Yeah, and I don't wear it when I'm at home opening for... I mean, I've always been... I've always been in a ponytail. So I feel comfortable being in a ponytail, if it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Probably will. And then comes the marriage. Now, I was married to my sweetheart. And I had this unbelievable belief that my parents divorced after 25 years of marriage. And each went separate ways in a different marriage. And his parents had similar, but his mother never married or anything. And on the contrary, his mother was more mother to me than anything. I don't know what happened. Honestly, it was a very, very sad. And I think he thought that I would be like his mother. I would never ask for a divorce. And I always showed I was weaker. Why? Because I'm very strong and very capable and very independent.
But you didn't want to show that in your marriage.
And throughout my marriage, I was dependent. Please do this.
On purpose.
On purpose.
That's women.
Absolutely.
You're one way in the office and you're one way at home.
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
And I remember when Dina came to do her stage at the company, training intern, and she was quite young. And she came back and said, "Mommy, everybody's scared of you. How are they scared of you? Why are they scared of you?" And it just shows you that they never believed that this is the same person at home.
That's at home.
And so I don't know how to explain it.
And you were married for how long?
I got a divorce in 2021. And I had been separated for 7 years. But I never even told anybody I was separated, even that. And I think that's where cancer came.
Interesting.
Because I didn't tell a soul.
And you kept it inside.
And I kept it inside. I'm not sure if this is true or not, but a lot of people say so.
A lot of stress can cause...
So it was all inside, and I didn't even tell my sisters, to that extent. And he was very kind to... He's a very proper person, and this is one of the very strange things. And he's extremely proper. And to me, it's just a myth why he would... go have another wife. And that's when I separated.
Wow,
and
Naveen, what was that like for you? Did your world shatter?
Yes.
It shattered.
Yeah. And I think since then, a lot of the no confidence that you don't show outside is inside. So when I asked for the divorce, I don't think he believed that I really wanted a divorce because I'm not his mom, who stayed.
But there are so many women who have this has happened to and they've accepted it.
Absolutely. But that's exactly why. I think the interesting part is I got a divorce and I have not spoken to him since.
Oh, really?
Can you imagine?
That must have been very difficult.
Typical my character.
You close
a chapter.
The door and that was it.
And that's it. I don't want to. And there's no reason for me to.
Your children are older.
Oh.
You don't need to share parenting anymore. That area is finished. Naveen, this is a lot to manage.
But I got cancer in 2017, which was very strange how I got to know.
But you got sick.
I got sick.
During the separation then?
Yes.
Before the divorce.
And he's always been my friend. And he's somebody I've known since I was 17. So you can imagine.
Of course.
And to my sisters. And I did not tell my family because to them, he's the boy that they have.
And he is the older brother for them.
Absolutely.
You're the eldest girl. And he's like their brother.
So I put this all into... So only my kids knew. And... other complications don't go through.
Yeah.
I think in 2017, I went to stay with my daughter because she had a paper to submit.
And your daughter's an academic now, right?
Yeah. And to sit with her son and everything. And every day we go out, she says, "Naveen, you're not well." And I say, my husband says, it's because of my weight.
Hmm.
By the end of the 3 weeks, she said, "Naveen, no, there's something wrong." She said, "We'll go to the doctor." I said, "I'm in France. I don't speak French. Let's go to London. I can speak the language and see a doctor there." Called one of my...
Did you feel anything?
Nothing. At all. And so I remember we went to this doctor. We went to everybody. Your legs, your weight, your everything. And then came back to Paris. And on my way to Cairo, I get this call from the doctor. "Madame Naveen, how are you on your 2 feet?
Wow.
And I said, "Your hemoglobin is 6.5.
Poof.
I said, "What does that mean?" He said, "You're bleeding. Where are you bleeding from?" I said, "I don't know. I'm not bleeding." He said, "You have to do an endoscopy now."
Hmm.
My husband is one of specialization, endoscopy. I said, "Fine." So the second day I came, I did the endoscopy. And so it's cancer. Colon cancer, third grade.
Third grade, yeah.
So I go to Paris because I had when I lost my mother in 2007. I lost her while I was there, and I think she died worried that I would...
She knew already that there were issues.
I did not... never. Nobody. But both my father died 2015, my mother 2017. Then none of them knew. And but I did not tell her that I had cancer, because she had cancer before me for 10 years. But when she got to know that I'm in hospital to do, she died while I was there. So I did not see her.
Wow, Naveen.
That's never been a closed chapter.
No, it never would be.
Yeah.
That's a very difficult thing to endure.
That's how my daughter was the reason.
She noticed before you did.
It was her. You know, if it hadn't been, I keep saying, telling her, I'm here because
she's
of you.
She's your angel. In my case, it was very different because I was pregnant. Yeah, I was pregnant with my second son, and I put on no weight in my pregnancy. When I delivered my second son, I was very weak. Both were by cesarean, but I was given a blood transfusion with the second delivery. And I went home, and we thought everything was okay. Yeah. And then 7 weeks later, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had lost 7 kilos in 7 weeks, and I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't, obviously, I couldn't breastfeed, I couldn't look after him.
Yes, it was breast cancer.
No, it was lymphoma. It was
Hodgkin's. Even worse. Oh my God.
Well, you know, actually, Naveen, they say what I had was actually the better of the options, yani.
I think colon cancer is better.
I don't know. Bussi, that's all crap. Let's be honest. Let's not fight over who had the better cancer. It's all awful. But luckily, the reason I think I was diagnosed so quickly was because I had just had the baby.
Oh.
I was still in the hospital environment.
Yes.
I was still going into the hospital regularly, and that my doctor became one of our best friends. And my mother called him and she said, you have to check her back in. There's something not right. So I went back in and they did a whole bunch of tests.
My God.
And it was only then that it was discovered, because when you're pregnant, you can't do x-rays.
Ah.
So it was found and luckily dealt with quickly. Luckily.
So you took chemo?
I did chemo for 6 months. But it's very, and it's traumatic for everyone, because, you know, in my situation, I was so young. I was 34.
Oh, my God.
And two very small children. And for me, it took me a good, I would say, you know, now when I look back on it, I think it took me 10 years.
Wow.
To mentally get over it. I think because I was so young.
Probably.
And it made me feel like my life got stopped.
Yes.
Just stopped.
And the thing is, because you also had very young children. And it's very young children, you have a lot of responsibility that you have to take.
And fear.
Oh my God.
I started fearing that I wouldn't be around for them. All sorts of things, you know?
And on the contrary, probably, I it's as though when they told me cancer, nothing. Until today, they make fun of me.
Yeah.
And you seem to be the only person who listens to these things. I say, you know what? We have excellent healthcare that I would have never imagined. I had only done my international healthcare a year earlier. Imagine. يعني طبعا, I was lucky because I saw what happened to my father, and I had decided I will do my international one. And you know what? I really think, as they told us in hospital, 50% of your health comes from you believing that you're going to be okay.
I think that has a lot to do with it. And I also think that when you're actually doing whatever treatment is required, that you've put yourself in a situation where you are going to be able to be good for yourself, good to yourself.
It's you being comfortable
exactly.
with the whole circumstances.
Exactly.
These are very hard circumstances to deal with.
Yeah.
For you don't want an external pressure that would put you into more difficulty.
But
and I think
it's so interesting that you are saying that you were almost at peace with the
absolutely.
Thing. I just interviewed Tariq Noor, and he also had a pretty intense cancer, and he said just like you. He said when I was given the diagnosis, I was fine with it, and I carried on with my life. Nothing changed.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, also I think. When you, first of all, when you're of a certain age,
yes.
And when you've done your life the way you've wanted,
absolutely,
it makes a difference.
Absolutely. And you know what? Even, you know, Malak, because I stayed in France for almost 7 months while I was being the whole time, it was the first time I sat with Dina and her kid. Otherwise, I just go for a weekend and I run. The 7 months meant a lot to me, seeing my grandkids grow.
My final question, do you want to live differently based on that experience? Do you want to slow down? Do you want to spend more time with your grandchildren? How do you see that happening for you?
I don't think I'll ever stop working. I'm now doing two things that I really love, other than my own thing, which I'm not doing well, my own thing. But I'm doing, I'm in parliament and I was appointed in parliament. So all of a sudden there's this responsibility that I've been put in this place and in the economic committee.
It's very prestigious.
I have a lot of knowledge, so diverse that I think I can do something. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I will or
I'm
not,
sure
but
you
I
can.
Will. And the other thing is I'm on the sovereign fund of Egypt.
Yeah.
And I am on the investment committee. This gives me also, because you are investing for the future generations, which, as I told you, the generations are what I care about. So these two jobs, I am so...
You're very invested in them.
Absolutely. And the only other thing is, I would love to go and stay in France with my kids.
Naveen, I'm so excited that you were with me on the show. What a fabulous conversation.
La wallahi, the pleasure is mine.
I really enjoyed
it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me today. If you've enjoyed hearing Naveen's story, we'll have a bonus episode for members out next week. You can sign up today at Apple Podcasts for a free trial, and you'll get access to our bonus episodes from this season. This episode of What I Did Next was brought to you by ANT Media with me, Malak Fouad, and is co-produced by Chirag Desai. You can follow us on social media for video snippets from our interviews and other updates. Just search for What I Did Next on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We'd be grateful if you could take a minute to leave us a review of the show in your favorite podcast player. We'll be back again next week, where Chirag and I take a look back at the best of the season and we take a quick peek into what's coming up in season 5 next year. Don't miss it.